Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. I'm already having a day. Getting ready to record this podcast, couldn't find my headphones, so I got up to get my headphones and I kicked over my water, which I keep on the floor, so that when I am drinking it during the podcast, you don't hear it tip-tapping on the table that my microphone is on. Then I walked through the giant puddle of water that was on my carpet. So we'll see how this episode goes. Okay, so did I do my intro? Good Lord, I'm already so lost. I don't care if I did or not. Whatever. News this week. Woo! News this week. Okay. So SAG-AFTRA is going back to the negotiating table on Tuesday of this week with the studios. You'll remember if you listened to last week's episode that talks broke down. The studios got their version of events out before the actors did and made the actors look bad. But now the actors are doing that all on their own because not only are they going, one of the main reasons I think they're going back to negotiations so quickly is that they stepped in a little doo-doo this week and made themselves look like big old dum-dums. And so you may have seen, I don't know, a few celebrities posted about it this week, including Ryan Reynolds and Mandy Moore and Melissa Gilbert, who used to be on Little House on the Prairie and is a former SAG president. So this week, the Actors Guild announced a reminder. They posted a reminder to not dress up for Halloween as any characters that may be from struck content. Meaning, like, even if you are not in Barbie, don't dress as a character from Barbie. Which, number one, is wild because Barbie was for decades and decades prior to the movie existing, not struck content. So that's crazy. But also, it's, okay. It's, I don't know how to explain. It's a little out of touch to be policing the things that people are dressing up as for Halloween. When, like, okay, first of all, this says, I'm all over the place, I apologize. So, first of all, this says to the union, we do not expect to have a resolution by Halloween. And when they posted this, Halloween was still almost 2 weeks away. So that's, like, that says right there where their mind's at, is that, like, they are not anticipating having a deal in place in the next 2 weeks. So that says that they're probably, that they either didn't anticipate returning to the negotiating table, or they're just like gonna let this ride, which to your guild members that you are purporting to be fighting for, and I talked about it on the podcast, you'll hear it from Fran Drescher and a whole shit ton of other people in the guild, that the vast majority of the people who are in the union do not make minimum. Those are the people who are really being affected right now. They're the ones who are in the union because they need to be. And they're not finding consistent acting work. Like, they're in the union, but it's like the second job, right? It's the people who do background work, who have maybe a couple of lines on a couple of TV shows a year, if that. It's those people who are affected right now. And to say that you are going to just, or to imply through, you know, math, that you are going to not be fighting for them after 100 days of a strike for at least another 113 plus days is gross. And then to also say that, like, it's somehow damaging or going, you're a scab if you dress up as, like, something from a movie or a TV show that you're not supposed to be promoting. So that's also confusing because, like, okay, so Mandy Moore was not in Barbie, but if she wants to dress up as Margot Robbie in Barbie, is she a scab? Does that count? You know, I don't know. Obviously, Ryan Reynolds shouldn't dress up as Deadpool for Halloween, but what if he wants to go as Ryan Gosling as Ken in Barbie? Does that count? Because he wasn't in Barbie, so he's not promoting work that was in the can, but it is work that the rest of the cast isn't promoting, so I guess he should. It's weird. And then he tweeted something that it was a joke, but I mean, facts. I look forward to screaming scab at my 8-year-old all night. She's not in the union, but she needs to learn. Like, obviously that's a joke, but also, yeah, where do you draw the line? Is Mandy Moore's kid allowed to dress up as Wolverine? Is Ryan Reynolds' daughter allowed to dress up as, I don't know, Captain Marvel? That movie's coming out in a couple weeks. Is she allowed to dress up as what the hell is popular with kids now? Like one of the characters from Monster High or The Descendants or Hocus Pocus or something? So it's so silly. And so SAG released this guideline, quote unquote, make Halloween a scream with these SAG after strike friendly tips and tricks. If you're looking for guidance on how to celebrate Halloween this year while also staying in solidarity with the strike, you've come to the right place. Don't post photos of costumes inspired by struck content to social media. Choose costumes inspired by generalized characters and figures, ghost, zombie, spider, etc. Dress up as characters from non-struck content, like an animated TV show. Let's use our collective power to send a loud and clear message to our struck employers that we will not promote their content without a fair contract. Now, okay, they've lost the thread. Like, the union has lost the thread with this and their minds in a lot of ways. Again, so when I said last week that the studio has made themselves look bad, made the actors look bad, this is what I'm talking about. Is like when you're also posting shit like this, you're making yourself look bad, it, all around, it's just not a good look. It's stupid. It's so stupid. So Mandy Moore posted something and said, is this a joke? This is what's important. We're asking you to negotiate in good faith on our behalf. So many people across every aspect of this industry have been sacrificing mightily for months. Get back to the table and get a fair deal so everyone can get back to work. Now, a few people pointed out SAG did not walk away. The studios did. And that could be true. We don't know. The studios blame SAG. SAG blame the studios. But regardless, get back to the table. Like, that's, she's not blaming SAG, but she's saying, like, when we are not working for months upon months, this is what you're worried about? No, go negotiate. And I agree with her. And then Melissa Gilbert, who again used to be the president of this union, said, this is what you guys come up with. Literally no one cares what anyone wears for Halloween. I mean, do you really think this kind of infantile stuff is going to end the strike? We look like a joke. Please tell me you're going to make this rule go away and go negotiate. So, okay, people want to come for Mandy Moore and say that that's not her fault, that you're wrong, that they didn't walk away. There's a former president who's been through the shit saying, go back to the table and shut up. That was the big news story of the week. And like, again, there's nothing else happening. Like, there's almost literally no news in the world as this is the stuff that is being discussed because stuff isn't being made. You know what I mean? Okay, so also now that the writers are back, NBC ordered a new TV series called Dr. Wolf, and it stars Zachary Quinto as like a brain surgeon. Woo, that's big news. So they're staffing a writing room, but again, like what the hell does that matter until there are actors who are allowed to be in it? And then the other thing is that Jon Stewart, that I wanted to talk about, Jon Stewart had a late night talk show on Apple TV and it got canceled after 2 seasons. Now, I had Apple TV for over a year and I literally did not know that Jon Stewart had a show on it. So that's a problem. It was called The Problem with Jon Stewart. And I think the problem is that no one knew your show existed. That is the problem. And I don't know what it was. I'm assuming it was similar to, which one did he do? What was his Comedy Central show called? It was The Colbert Report before it was The Colbert Report. You know, The Daily Show? It was The Daily Show. Jesus Christ. Whew. My brain, I told you guys, it's just not working. The Daily Show. You know, I'm assuming that it was inspired by The Daily Show, where he's probably talking about, you know, politics, current affairs, political events, whatever. But yeah, apparently it had two seasons, 10 episodes each. One aired in 2021, one aired in 2022. And like around this time would have been when the third season would have premiered, based on when the first two did. And it didn't happen. So Apple was like, oh yeah, we canceled that. Sorry. Now, number one, this is strange because Apple renews everything. They just spend money. They don't care. If you are a show on Apple, you're getting at least two seasons, I would just, you know, because no one watches Apple TV Plus. So that's strange that like they had canceled it to begin with, and especially since it's a talk show, it's probably cheap. But again, the bigger problem here is that like, how does Apple TV reach people? You know, Ted Lasso has won how many Emmys now? And that is their most watched show. And in any given week, it's like one episode of one TV show airing 1 hour in 1 week on the CW. That's how many people watch it. It's atrocious. Like, no one watches Apple TV. So of course, and again, I had Apple TV and did not know the show existed. That's a problem too. So, and these are the people, like these are the companies, the studios that are controlling whether actors can work or not. Like, they're burning through money on streaming that they're not sharing with actors anyway. And then, but then they don't know what they're doing with it. Do you know what I mean? Like, Apple TV has all of this content and they don't know how to promote it or get people to watch it. It's so fucking weird. Like, Paramount, one of the CEO or somebody at Paramount who has like run that, like, they don't know how to get people to subscribe to Paramount Plus. So they have like Showtime and Paramount Plus merged them, and now the only way to get Paramount Plus content without commercials is to pay extra and also get Showtime. I don't need to do that. I get Showtime separately. My parents have it on their cable account and I use their cable account. Shh, don't tell anybody. So I don't need Paramount Plus with Showtime. So I'm not going to pay, like, there are shows that I want to watch on Paramount and that I would at this point pay to have without commercials, namely Drag Race All-Stars and Survivor, which I'm going to talk about today, because now that it's 90 minutes, I would much rather save myself the, like, God, 30 plus minutes of commercials on live TV and like 20 plus minutes of commercials on Paramount Plus. I would pay to get rid of those commercials. But now the only way to do that is to pay like another premium and to get Showtime, which I don't need. So like, here's another person just does not know what to do with this streaming content. Everyone wants to have their own streaming service so they can reap the rewards of it. But then those rewards are never returning to them because they don't know how to sell their product. It's wild. Like, if you follow, I follow TV Grim Reaper on Twitter, or X, I guess it's called now. And he tweets a weekly table of the most watched series on all the major streaming services. So he posts like Hulu, Disney Plus, Prime, Netflix, Apple TV, and I think that's it. Paramount and Peacock aren't in there. But regardless, the only one with a significant number of viewers is Netflix. Everything else, it's like on Disney Plus, right now it's catch up, so it's when Ahsoka was on. That's the only show that gets a significant number of viewers, and even that is not a huge number compared to like what the bottom of the barrel is on Netflix. So everyone wants to be the next Netflix, but no one knows how to do that. I don't know how they do that. I'm not in marketing. That is not my job. But rather than like burning through money that you are then going to turn around and say, well, we can't pay the actors because we can't pay ourselves because we're spending all this money and losing it, what is the solution? Sell your shit to Netflix then, if that's what it takes. Like, Suits is the most watched thing in the country right now because 8 or 9 seasons of it are on Netflix and everyone's just like binging it in the background while they're folding laundry or making dinner or having conversation. Like, who the fuck can watch 9 seasons of Suits? But apparently everyone in the country is, because it's exploded and now it's at the point where they're going to order like new Suits spinoffs and shit because of how, like, and if, okay, so if that's what it takes, then like sell your content to Netflix. I don't know what the solution is, but like this is all connected and it's all fucked up. Okay, that's it for news. Whew, now I'm like heated and confused and my head's all over the place. So let's talk about Survivor. I mentioned this season of Survivor 45 is 90 minutes because of the strike. Again, CBS didn't have content to fill its schedule, so it extended both Survivor and The Amazing Race by 30 minutes. So Survivor's on at 8 until 9:30, and Amazing Race is from 9:30 till 11, which I think this is smart, and I don't know why they didn't do this before, considering Survivor has always been one of their most popular shows, and so good for them. I both welcome and despise the new 90-minute format, and mostly that's because I don't feel like we're getting a whole lot more show, so to speak. And we're getting a lot more commercials. I know that. But I don't feel like I don't know. It's not that I'm not learning more, because I am learning more about the people, but like, because it's still so early. Maybe later on in the season, I will appreciate it, because that like extra time spent with these individuals will make more sense in the long run. And like, that's been a critique I and a lot of people have had with Survivor, especially recently, is that this new era, as Jeff Probst loves to call it, of Survivor that started after the All Winners season, has changed the game in a way that I don't find as entertaining as I used to. And I think it's because like the challenges are being repeated. So like last year we had, what's his name? I want to say it's Connor. I don't know if that's true. The little geeky kid who was with Carolyn and Jam Jam, who solved a 3D puzzle in record time very easily because they reused the exact same puzzle from a previous season. And he had watched that season and had the puzzle 3D printed, and he'd practiced that exact puzzle at home. So they not only reused the challenge, they reused the exact same puzzle. So he knew exactly where all the pieces went. So it's not just that they're reusing the challenges that has changed the game. It's also that like these new twists and advantages and stuff are just fundamentally changing the way everyone plays the game socially. And I don't think for the better. So like this season, let's give an example, Jake, who is on Bello, one of the three tribes, the Blue Tribe. I love Jake. He's this like little Boston bear, and he has the thick Boston accent, and he's like hairy and a little overweight, but adorable. I love him. And he's a lawyer. He lives with his grandmother in her attic, and he's a public defender, or he's a prosecutor or something like that. Like, he works for the city or county or state or whatever. Like, he's a public lawyer. So he's not actually making that much damn money. But he tells his tribe he's a lawyer, and immediately everyone wants to vote him off. Because like, oh, you're a lawyer. You shouldn't be here. You don't need the money. You're too smart. You're going to backstab. You're too good at like knowing how to talk yourself out of situations. All based on his profession before they've met him. This is like literally within minutes of them getting to the beach. That is fucking stupid. That is so dumb that this new era has made everyone like, so there's another lawyer, Katora, who I love as well. And she hasn't told people she's a lawyer because she knew from watching previous seasons that would put a target on her back. And that is dumb. That is dumb for people to go in and they're fundamentally changing their social game by just lying to people. Do you know what? Like, this Survivor has always made this big deal about trust, that like, you know, trusting the right person can take you all the way. Trusting the wrong person can stab you in the back. A person who you did trust can betray you, and how that alters your game and their game. And then, you know, like, let's say someone gets to the end and they've made alliances with everyone and fucked them all over. They might have played a great game and manipulated and got to the end and outwitted, but that doesn't mean that people are going to like them. And you can hold on to a grudge when you get to that end, and the jury might fuck you over because you fucked them over. So now, instead of having all of that like interpersonal play, people are just lying. They're just like making up their own stories about themselves as they play the game. That's not interesting. That's stupid. Like, you might as well be watching a movie or something scripted if these people are coming in here and, like, making up their life stories and their professions. And it's annoying. I don't like that. Then also you get these advantages that are, like, making them quite literally sometimes jump through hoops to get the advantages. And then there's all these rules of, like, you found this advantage, but it's only good for two tribals. But if you save it for a third tribal, you'll get even more power. And then it makes everyone make stupid decisions. I don't like it. It's so complicated and unnecessarily so. And getting back to my point, that one of the biggest complaints I and other Survivor fans have had of late in these seasons is that people seem to be making decisions that we don't understand because we don't get to see enough of the decision-making process and enough of the camp backstory. That is what is being mostly remedied or set up, I think, with the new format of the extra time, is that we're now spending more time each episode at each tribe. So even the, like, so that's annoying to me, because in the first three episodes, one tribe goes to tribal council every single episode. So to watch a whole episode of, like, 10 to 15 minutes of the other tribes looking for idols, finding advantages, scheming, aligning themselves together, going on, like, advantage, what do they call them, journeys or whatever, watching those things, and then there being zero payoff in the episode because it ends up that another tribe is going to tribal council, I now feel like I've wasted my time watching this. Now, I'm assuming that information becomes important later in the season, so that's great. You know, like, we spent Reba in the first three episodes is the red tribe. And first of all, how wonderful. I'm sure it's like a native word, a Fijian word for something, but the fact that the red tribe's name is Reba, hysterical. Anyway, like, we spent a lot of time with those people. Like, someone finds an idol. I think his name is Austin. I think it's Austin. Austin finds an idol, and, you know, we see him scheming and then, you know, building these alliances, and then we see the alliances break up because they are now go to a new tribe in the fourth episode. So, like, what we learned in episodes 1, 2, 3 will now carry over because we have more of a context of the relationship the tribes used to have. And I get that that's interesting, but in that particular episode, when I'm watching Drew and Austin hunt for this idol, find this idol, jump through these hoops, strategize and all this stuff, all for them to win the immunity necklace, I'm like, why did I just spend all this time watching you scheme when I'm not going to get a payoff to it for who knows how many episodes? So, like, Survivor's playing a long game here, and that's great. And I'm sure by the end of the season, I will be very grateful for it. But in the moment, it bores me more than anything. And on top of that, I just don't think the casting has been that great in this quote-unquote new era. Again, Jeff Probst calls it this. They have a new podcast that I think I might have recommended last year. I loved it last year. It's called On Fire, and it's a recap podcast that comes out as soon as the episode airs. And Jeff hosted it last year, and he's not hosting it this year. He's co-hosting it with Devins, who, again, we're talking about the new era and how frustrating it is. Devins was the only person in his season, I think it was season 38, playing a winnable game, like a game that should be rewarded at the end. And he didn't even make, like, I think he made, like, maybe top six. Like, it wasn't even that he got cut at the final tribal. Like, it was even before that. And that was the season that Chris, who was on Exile or Redemption or something, like, he was voted out and then came back. He won the whole season because when it got to the final tribal, they were like, well, I don't want any of you to win. But okay, this guy made fire in the last episode and came back, so I guess we'll give him $1 million. So the guy who won was barely in the season. Like, he got it voted out way at the beginning, came back in the second to last episode, and then won the whole show. So Devin's great example of why this new era does not work for me is hosting this podcast. And Jeff keeps calling it this new era, and he says how great their casting is and that they're the best reality show on TV for a reason. And I will not deny Survivor that they have some of the most iconic reality television stars of all time come out of the show. I mean, the very first season, Richard Hatch was for decades a meme. everyone knew his name, like the naked man, like everyone made fun of it for a while after, but like people know who Richard Hatch is to this day. And he was on the show 23 years ago. You know, you have Boston Rob and Rupert and Parvati and Johnny Fairplay, who is on House of Villains right now, Colby Donaldson, Jerry Manthe, Tina, Ethan Zahn, I think his last name was. We had all of these like icon, Sandra, Tony, Randall, like we had Randall Hance. Was that his name? Yeah. Confusing myself again. All these like iconic Survivor players who then like made a name for themselves, went on to do other things. Some in the reality TV realm. Siri is on Big Brother, just won the Traitors. You know, like Survivor builds these amazing, TV personalities. I can't name a single one since this quote unquote new era started that is even halfway to the level that these, that those others players I just named are and were. And I think it's because of the way that the gameplay has changed, and it's because of the casting. And like, they can say that they have the best casting in history, in all of TV, but then first of all, Drag Race exists, so you can take a seat. But secondly, is let's talk about this season where they put the most insufferable personalities all together on a tribe called Lulu. And that tribe imploded before they were even on their beach, with Emily, who is the most unlikable person to ever play this game, and immediately starts coming for everyone and is over the top, like scared, trying to stay, but then being a complete asshole the whole time. So we think it's going to be, when they lose the first challenge, we think it's going to be an easy vote out. And instead, on day three, we are talking less than 72 hours after this show has started, Hannah goes to tribal and quits. She just quits. It's too hard. She'd rather watch the show from home. Literally, she says this, that she'd rather be watching on her couch than playing. And even though it's been her dream to play this game, she quits on day three. Cool. Whatever. But the fact that like she quits, that means that we have insufferable Emily and dipshit Brandon, who is another player who before they even get to the beach, they're like gathering all their supplies and seeing who gets Flint or whatever. And Brandon jumps off of a pirate ship and can't climb a rope ladder to get back on. He just sits in the water. Their team was in the lead. And then he just completely blows it because he can't climb literally two rungs up a ladder. At one point, they're like leaning over to rip him up and to get him on the boat, and he can't even get up one rung of the ladder to get onto the boat. Useless. Then the next episode, he somehow survives. Emily somehow survives because Hannah fucking quits. The next episode, Brandon finds an idol or an advantage, but then gives it away because he doesn't want to risk his vote. He says it's a beware advantage. He's like, that means I'm going to lose my vote until I can do the thing, and I don't want to lose my vote. So he gives it away to Sabaya, who is a black woman from the South, the only person playing the game in an entertaining way on that tribe. So then Brandon goes on one of these journeys where they're like, you can complete this puzzle and get an advantage, or if you don't complete it in time, you lose your vote. And what does he do? He plays the fucking game, doesn't do it, loses, and then loses his fucking vote anyway. You could have had an advantage from your own tribe, you idiot. So then he goes to tribal and doesn't have a vote anyway. And then neither does Sabaya, because she found the advantage but didn't get the idol yet. So there's two votes. So now, and then someone else doesn't vote or plays a shot. I think Emily plays a shot in the dark or something. There's three votes in it. And two votes means someone goes home. So Brandon goes home, dud, bye. So we have a quitter, someone who literally can't do anything. And then the third episode, they think Sabaya's running things. So they send her home. And again, she was the only one actually playing the game on this tribe. She had found the advantage. She got this little tiki thing that she had to melt in the fire to get the idol out of, but because they're losers and haven't gotten their flint yet, they're on day 7 with no fucking fire. So she can't get her idol until they get to tribal and she throws the thing in the tribal fire. But then, because they have these fucking twists where she thinks she's safe, so she's like, oh, well, if I don't play my idol, it gets more power later. So she doesn't play the idol and goes home with the idol in her pocket. Then in episode 4, which just aired this week, we get another quitter. Sean, who was also on Lulu. So 4 of these 6 tribe members have gone home. We swap tribes. He's on Reba, which was the winner. They end up losing the first challenge. And I don't think he was in danger of going home, but he thought he was. So rather than just get voted out, he decides to quit because he wants to go home and see his husband. Which, fucking newsflash, you don't go home immediately after being voted out. You still have to sit around until the jury starts to get voted out. Then you get to go home. So he gets to spend another like week or so at the very least at Ponderosa in a fucking hotel in Fiji, not going home like he said he wanted to. It makes no sense. And then, so he quits. So in the first 4 episodes, the quit rate is 50%. Half of the first 4 eliminations were people quitting. How can you say that you have a great casting department and you cast people and these people are living out their dreams when they just fucking quit? I'm so mad about it. Like, I'm not saying any of this jokingly. You can probably hear it in my voice. But I am actually angered by this. I don't find it entertaining. I don't find it silly or goofy or funny or like, oh my God, how incompetent can you be? No, that makes me mad that someone like Brandon, it was his dream to be on the show, and then he gets on the show and can't do anything. And not only that, Jeff revealed on the podcast that they had Brandon in their back pocket for casting for years until they finally found the right fit for him in this season. So you mean to tell me that you wanted to cast this person so badly and you held on to him till just the right moment and he's the second person to go home and should have been the first one to go home and is completely fucking incompetent and can't do anything and you think that's great casting? Are you actually kidding me? You think it's great casting to have someone named Sifu who is a black guy who does Tai Chi and just plays fucking air guitar on their machete all the time? That is not an interesting person. That is an annoying person. Do you know what I'm like? I don't even know what else to say. Like, nothing about this season I'm loving. I know I'm in the minority. Like, a lot of people, I've been reading on Twitter and stuff that people are really into the season because we're getting to see the machinations and, like, you know, obviously later on, all of these things are going to help. They're going to make sense to see all the, like, the behind the scenes of who is aligned with who. And then we're moving on to tribes and how does that alliance carry over with that having, like, we don't usually see a lot of that stuff, especially at this point when there's this many cast members. Like, we're still at 14 people, you know, 4 episodes in and there are still 14 people left. That's a lot of tribe members. So the fact that we're getting this much airtime for everyone is good for everyone on the show. But it just makes everything so muddled and feel so pointless half the time when it just ends up with people fucking quitting. Like, we're seeing some people play their friggin' asses off, like Austin, like D, like Katora, like Drew. Like, we are seeing these people really trying and really, like, throwing themselves headfirst into Survivor. But then at the end of the episode, we just get somebody fucking quitting. It's annoying. It's so annoying. That's all I have to say about that, I think. See, so if you... My Twitter bio, X bio, I'm never calling it X. Sorry, Elon. Says that I like to complain about TV even when I love it. And this is a prime example of that. Like, I love Survivor. I just bitched about it for a good, 20 minutes? But I love Survivor and I have always loved Survivor. And that's why I'm so mad at it right now and have been for, and not that I've been mad at it for years, but why I haven't enjoyed it as much in the past few years is that I love this frickin' show. I watched season 1 as it was happening. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't watch, I got caught up in the cultural zeitgeist, and I watched, I think, like the last two or three episodes, including the one where they gave Richard the money. So I'm not going to say that I was a day one, episode one, minute one fan like I was with Drag Race. That one I will stand by. I was watching that fucking first episode live as it aired on Logo, and that makes me better than a lot of new fans. And I stand by that. But like with Survivor, the first season I started watching from beginning to end was season two, Australian Outback. And I have watched every single season at least once since then. There are some seasons I've watched multiple times. Pearl Islands is one. China is one. Gabon is one. Heroes versus Villains. I've watched this show a lot and I enjoy it. And that's why I'm hard on it, is because I love it so much that I've never missed an episode of this show. So to see it like changing so much, and in a lot of ways not for the better, or in ways that could be for the better but are right now not, like adding on the extra 20 or so minutes to the episode, it makes me mad. And sad, because I want to love it the way that I did like 15 years ago. Do you know what I mean? Like, I still love Drag Race the way that I loved it season one. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, there are shows that I loved, loved, loved their entire runs. And now obviously Drag Race hasn't been on for 45 years, but it's close considering how many of those international seasons and all-star seasons I watch. But I love it the way that I did that first minute. I don't love Survivor the way that I did that first minute because of all these changes, but I do still love it, and that's why I'm mad at it. You know what I mean? It's like when your parents say, "I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed," and it's because they love you, so they say like, "I can't be mad at you, I love you too much. I'm just disappointed in your actions," or whatever the fuck. That's where I am with Survivor. Still, it's on Wednesdays at 8 o'clock on CBS and streaming next day on Paramount Plus. If you're an old fan, I would love for y'all to dip in and tell me what you think, because I feel like I'm in the minority here and I don't really know. I've not read anything from anyone who loves these new seasons, especially this current one, that has convinced me that I am wrong or that is even a reason to like it other than, but it's longer. It's more Survivor. Yeah, that more of a good thing isn't always a better thing. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes less is more. Maybe then, I don't know. Anyway, okay, on to my recommendations. I hope you all watched my first week Countdown to Christmas recommendation, even though it is October 23rd when this episode comes out. I know it's too early, I get it, but I don't fucking care, because Countdown to Christmas is my happy place. And if you are one of those people yucking my yum, I don't like you. So my first week recommendation was Where Are You Christmas? I watched it this morning. It was fantastic. It is already the one to beat for the whole season, and it's only the second movie. I find it hard. It's going to be hard to beat this one, honestly. There are some coming up that I think may have potential, especially toward the end of the season, to be better or more entertaining or whatever, but it is high concept and it works. It is a romance, but it's not about the romance. It is about Christmas, which that's my and a lot of people's critiques, I think, with the Hallmark and Lifetime Christmas movies, is that it's a fairly standard like meet cute or romance, and it just happens to be set at Christmas. So like the first movie of the season was Checking It Twice. I mentioned it last week. That was the hockey one, and that one was very much that was a story that had nothing to do with Christmas. It just happened to take place around Christmas, so they could talk about Christmas things like candy canes and trees and Christmas festivals. Like that story about a hockey player who got drafted into a new location and he tried to get out by, you know, moving up in the ranks, but he meets someone, a big city girl. Like that's all very standard romance stuff and very standard Hallmark Christmas movie stuff, but it also did not need to happen at Christmas. And I really do wonder if it was a non-Christmas movie that they made a Christmas movie because they were running behind, or because they needed more Christmas scripts before the strike or during the strike. I don't know. But Where Are You Christmas? High concept, about Christmas, very much about the season, about the meaning, about the traditions, all of that stuff. It was great. I hope you watched it. So coming up this week, We have our first Thursday night movie, which is on Hallmark Movies and Mysteries and also streaming beginning Friday on Peacock. And these are the more like sentimental movies. They tend to be either more character or plot driven rather than romance driven. Like, they're not so much about the pairing or like the end game of kissing in the final scene. They're more about like an emotion or a story or a connection or family a lot of times, things like that. So the first Hallmark Movies and Mysteries, their theme is called Miracles of Christmas, is called Miss Christmas Comes to Town. A Shopping Channel host known as Miss Christmas receives a terminal diagnosis, which inspires a multi-city excursion set to spread Christmas cheer before her farewell broadcast. Holy fuck. So right off the bat, you know what I'm talking about. Like, that does not sound like a happy, giddy Christmas movie. I'm dying, so I want to go on a final Christmas tour before I croak. Wild. That stars Erica Durance, Barbara Niven, and Brennan Elliott. That is on at 8 o'clock on Thursday. On Friday, the Hallmark Channel movie is Christmas by Design. A fashion designer gets accepted into a Christmas challenge to create a new holiday-themed collection and not only finds the inspiration for her next line, but decides to redesign her approach to what's most important in life. Sounds like Project Runway meets Hallmark. I don't recognize either of the people in it, and the cast isn't listed on the Hallmark app, so I have no idea who the fuck it is. So let's move on to Saturday. Saturday's movie is Mystic Christmas. A woman travels to Mystic, Connecticut during the holidays and reconnects with the owner of the pizza shop. Okay, now you're speaking my language. So we're getting a Mystic Pizza reference on a Hallmark Channel movie, which, if you have not watched Mystic Pizza starring Julia Roberts, that's your first thing to do. Before you watch Mystic Christmas, go find Mystic Pizza and watch that. Mystic, Connecticut is a very cute town. I've driven through it a couple of times. They have like the aquarium, which is really nice and features prominently in the poster. So I'm assuming they go there at some point. And the Mystic Pizza shop, which is, from what I've heard, not all that great pizza, but very famous and has fun t-shirts. And that one stars Jesse Schramm, who was in A Nashville Christmas Carol and a bunch of others. Patty Murin from one of my favorites last year in Mary Measure. She was also the original Elsa in Frozen on Broadway. And Chandler Massey, who was in one of my favorites from 2 years ago, Next Stop Christmas. And that's probably going to be a recommendation for the week. Although the Sunday one also sounds fun. So the Sunday movie is called Joyeux Noël. And I just love saying Merry Christmas in French. It's fun. Joyeux Noël. When a romantic painting of a Christmas market captures the imagination of copy editor Leah, she is sent to France with pragmatic reporter Mark to uncover the mystery behind the artist. Now, this one also sounds fun. I believe they actually filmed it in Paris, so that's fun. We have the mystery element. Cool. And also, the leading lady of this is not your stick thin, perfect blonde piece of ass that Hallmark Channel loves so much. Her name is JC Elliott. She was in My Southern Family Christmas last year. She was great. And Brant Daugherty, who is one of the hottest men alive, and he used to be on Pretty Little Liars and was also on Dancing with the Stars. So I want it to be, maybe I'll make it this one. You know what? Fuck Mystic Pizza. I love Mystic Pizza. Mystic Christmas one sounds fun. I love Patty Murin. It's probably going to be silly and fun and goofy. Maybe the one that I'm going to recommend is actually the Sunday one, Joyeux Noël, because I want it to be good. See, like, I know what I'm going to get from Mystic Christmas, which is why I think that one will be good, because I know exactly what's going to happen. I know they're going to go to the aquarium, they're going to watch, like, some seals and a polar bear, and they're going to have a nice little heart-to-heart, and the music is going to swell, and then right before they kiss, they're, like, a seal is going to knock on the glass or something. They're going to eat a bunch of pizza. They're probably going to make some, you know, they're going to acknowledge some of the famous lines from Mystic Pizza, and, you know, there's going to be a lot of pretty shots of the town, because it's also going to be a tourism thing. But Joyeux Noël has maybe more of an opportunity to be something. Like, I'm not exactly sure what it will be. Sometimes these, like, well, who's the, what's the mystery of the painting? Like, that could either flop real fucking hard, or it could be really endearing. They tend to go both ways. J.C. Eliot, Brant Daugherty, not an expected pairing, but also, I'm here for it. So my recommendation is going to be Joyeux Noël. Or, if you're an American POS, Joyeux Noël, airing Sunday, October 29th at 8 o'clock on the Hallmark Channel, and then it will be streaming starting next Monday the 30th. So, you know, bundle yourself up on Halloween and watch a Christmas movie. Why not? Okay, that'll do it for me this week. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this episode of Fake TV Critic. I will be back next week with more news, more recaps, more reviews, more analyses, and more recommendations. Have a good weekend, everyone.